previously on Willing to Adapt.
Yes, today we're actually looking at an adaptation of two different movies, Scarface, which I'd be surprised if someone didn't know what movie that was. Even if you'd never watched it, I think almost everyone has at least heard of it.
At least heard of Say Hello to My Little Friend. The main one that people are familiar with is the 1983 film Scarface with Al Pacino. But most people, and myself included, did not know that it's actually based on a 1934 movie.
32.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. 1932 movie. I think, you know, after watching Scarface, I don't think it's glorifying it, but there's definitely a culture out there of people who don't see the cautionary tale and only look at the cool things that come from being,
I would agree,
you play by own rules, and you know, there's this romanticization of, you know, you do whatever you can to make it, and even if it means bending the laws or full on breaking them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think some people look at it as like a weird version of the American dream. So the film, it's actually inspired by the gangster Al Capone, who, if you don't know Al Capone, he was a really big name for the time. He was actually still alive when the film came out. Yeah, so he ended up going and watching the film.
Whenever the message trumps the art rarely is good.
Is there even like a sex scene in this? And then you hear from off camera, yeah, like, oh. Oh, okay. Yeah, we got a film.
I'm Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
Have you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt. A word here I'm going to need your help with.
Sure.
So Scarface is also a 1983 American crime drama film, and it was directed by Brian De Palma. It was written by Oliver Stone and starring Al Pacino, also Michelle Pfeiffer, Robert Loggia, so on and so forth. It, of course, is a remake of the 1932 film of the same name, although it does add a lot to it. It definitely buffers it out. And
But there, it was to me, it was amazing to see how similar they were.
Oh, yeah. The structure, the skeleton is the same.
Yeah.
Like, all the main plot points are exactly the same. Mm-hmm. There's like a lot that they added into it, and they definitely updated it and modernized it. It's a story of a Cuban refugee, Tony Montana, who's played by Al Pacino, and he arrives penniless in Miami, Florida during the, and this is the word I need your help with.
Sure.
Mariel boat lift? It was a famous one during the early 80s.
Yeah, Mariel boat lift.
Yeah. And he becomes a powerful drug lord. He starts off as nothing, and he works his way up in the system. Basically, he ends up getting greedy. It's the same plot, though. You know, he has a thing for his boss's girlfriend. But the big overhanging thing in this one is cocaine.
Yes.
And, like, he ends up becoming addicted to it. And the girlfriend's addicted to it, and that's what ends up fueling him in the end of the movie. Like, he's on a cocaine-fueled mayhem, like, shooting everybody up. And that's why he's able to last as long as he does. And apparently, they consulted with real cops and people, narcotics officers, and they said, yep, that's exactly how people operate when they're on cocaine. But I was watching an interview with Michelle Pfeiffer. I think it was one of the anniversaries for the film, and they had a whole talk back with the audience sort of thing. And I guess she was starving herself during the filming, just so that she could have that like cocaine addicted.
You know,
look.
That kind of makes sense in looking at how she looked in the film. Yeah.
I guess by the end she was like getting so skinny and like was hardly eating anything that like crew members were coming up to her and like, please eat.
Wow.
And that's one of those method acting things that I do not like about acting in general, but especially Hollywood. And I think in some way we've moved away from that, but I also know it still exists for a fact. It's just not healthy.
Yeah.
That's how people get screwed up. Also, apparently, the writer, he based a lot of the experiences, especially with cocaine, on his own experiences, because he was addicted to cocaine at the time.
Oh, wow.
So when he was writing it, he was actually like taking cocaine. He was snorting it up. And so it kind of makes some sense because the movie's a little weird.
Yeah.
And so I guess it was Puccino who was interested in the remake first after watching the 1932 version. And I think very briefly they thought about remaking it and setting it in the 30s.
Okay.
And then I don't can't remember who it was, but eventually someone said, well, let's just update it to modern times.
Okay.
And then once they decided to make it Cuban and based off of cocaine and stuff, then the whole story really came together.
Okay.
So it was released in December 9th of 83 by Universal Pictures, and it grossed $45 million at the domestic box office and $66 million worldwide.
And Universal owns the rights to the other one, right? The original.
I think so.
Because I'm pretty sure when the movie started, it was a Universal symbol. I can't remember. Yeah.
It did not do well.
Really? I did not know that.
It had the critical response was very negative due to the excessive violence and the profanity and the graphic drug usage.
Huh.
Also, some Cuban expatriates in Miami objected to the film's portrayal of Cubans as criminals and drug traffickers, which, you know, I guess makes sense. But I guess over time, critics kind of changed their opinion.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear about how he got away with not getting an X rating?
Mm-mm.
No?
No.
Oh, man. It's so weird. So, for anybody who has seen the movie, it has a lot of cussing. The 1983 version of Scarface contains 207 uses of the F word and its variants.
Wow.
It held the title of the most F-bombs in a film for a very long time.
Okay.
And unfortunately, in current years, it has been surpassed. One of them was The Wolf of Wall Street, also straight out of Compton.
Okay, never seen either one of them.
I think Pulp Fiction also beat it, I'm not sure.
Also another one I've never seen.
Again, it's a Tarantino film, I'm not interested. But... All right, so... Less than 2 months before the film's release, on October 28th of 1983, Scarface was given an X rating by the MPAA for excessive and cumulative violence and for language.
Wow.
Yes. Says a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So De Palma had already recut the film 3 times by that point. He stated, I said I've had it with these people. I am not taking any more out. Yeah, basically they were like designated as like a pornographic film.
Oh, wow.
They said if they accepted the X rating, like, that was, like, how it would have been perceived.
Mm-hmm.
And Universal would not release the film with an X rating due to the porn perception.
Yeah.
And so what ended up happening, which, again, this is talking about doing what you can to succeed, right?
Mm-hmm.
De Palma ended up going and promising to make a bunch of cuts. But basically... didn't make the cuts.
Mm.
And then he released the very first version without any of the cuts. And he just tricked.
That's funny.
Yeah. But what he did, though, was he went to the studio with, like, a bunch of, like, narcotics officers and people, and he had them testify, basically, to the studio saying, no, this is an accurate perception of, like, the drug cartel and what they do.
Okay.
And stuff. But, yeah, he basically... told them he was going to make a bunch of cuts and then just use the very original cut.
That's funny.
And he only admitted it months after the film's release.
Okay.
So, on the theme... So, I got a question for you.
Sure.
What do you think Al Pacino was snorting in the film?
Parmesan. I don't know. That's actually a good question. I never really thought about that.
Because he's actually snorting. Like, he's actually snorting stuff in his
powdered sugar. What was it?
So, the myth is that he was snorting real cocaine on camera.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a fact that the cocaine that was used in the film was fake cocaine. Like, it was not real.
Yeah.
Al Pacino is a method actor, so he definitely was probably doing some things.
Yeah.
And who knows what he was doing off screen. But what you see in the film was not real cocaine, but what... people have surmised it to be, although I don't think it's ever been proven, is powdered milk.
It's kind of gross, but okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that burn?
Yeah, I don't know. But whatever it was, on record, it has created problems for Pacino's nasal passages.
Oh.
He said for years after he had things up in there. And he said he doesn't know what happened to his nose, but it changed.
Wow.
Yes. Well, your nose isn't really meant to have things up it, so.
Yes.
But they did a lot of research. They actually went into Florida, and they actually would talk to people within the cartels mm-hmm. and the gangs and stuff. So they try to get as accurate as possible. Although, to be fair, the film is very stylized.
Yeah.
Like, it is larger than life. It is a lot more violent and in your face. And they said that was on purpose. Like, they were trying to be a little shocking.
Mm, okay.
And they were trying to show people, like, how things have changed and stuff like that. Like, the craziest one,
mm-hmm.
the chainsaw scene.
Oh, yeah.
When I watched that, I'm like, we're like maybe 20, 30 minutes into this movie.
That's
like,
funny. I actually blocked that from my memory until you just brought like, it back up.
It only has to get worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I think.
But it's based off of a real circumstance, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but,
and I get that. I get wanting to have realism and to show things like that. But I don't know. I just, because like I also have a hard time. Maybe it also doesn't appeal to me. I'd be curious to see like true crime people if they like watching those type of things. Like people who watch maybe say Narcos or things like that. Mm. And then they're into the true crime podcasts and where they like to hear about the stories. I know there's two different groups that do it. You have your more sensationalized people versus your more relational people, because I know a lot of people who love true crime stuff but are not into the narco type stuff. Yeah, but I don't know. It'll be a while before we do another podcast like this one, if ever. There's plenty of other literature out there and other movies, but I think at the same time it was interesting to watch because it is something that is in the popular consciousness.
We want something a little bit more modern and a little different than our normal stuff.
Yeah, and it's good for us to get out of our comfort zones a little bit.
Yeah. Mm. So the majority of the film was shot in Los Angeles because even though it was supposed to be Miami, Florida, it was done because the production would have been endangered by protests from angry Cuban Americans over the film's reported subject matter.
Interesting.
So streets and buildings that were used for the shooting were redressed by the art directors to have the feel of Miami.
Was any of it filmed in Miami, I wonder? Do you know?
I don't think any of it was really filmed in Miami. I think they got like B shots and
that's okay. Cause I remember talking to someone some time ago and they were like, they had visited Miami and they were like, oh yeah, I saw some of the places that were from the movie. And I'm thinking of you know,
yeah. But to be fair, they set dressed a lot of LA to look like Miami.
Mm.
And then two, a lot of Los Angeles, especially during that time, and a lot of Miami were being built up around the same time period anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have similar architecture, even though Miami is a bit more, for lack of a better word, exotic.
Yeah, no, I, because there was one point too where not too long ago, actually now it's been about a year, there was a building they drove by. And then as I saw the building, it reminded me of something from Santa Monica. And for a minute, I wondered if that was Santa Monica, but I don't know. Who knows?
Well, it's when I was down in Los Angeles last month, I think, I was walking down the street with my friend and I was looking. And it's like, well, the street looks really familiar. Why does the street look familiar?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, oh, this is the scene in Scarface.
Oh, okay.
I think it's the scene where he puts the bomb on that guy's car.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, I recognize the street. I mean, it looks different now, but I recognized it still. Like, there are certain buildings that I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I'm just that weird guy that notices buildings in movies because I like architecture and stuff.
I did the same with Rush Hour. I was in Chinatown.
I haven't seen that in so long. Yeah, but I think, oddly enough, the 1980s movie is far more like anti that lifestyle than the 30s one is, because I think the 30s one, it in a way it did kind of glorify, you know, the mobsters, even though, you know, it was against them still. Like,
mm-hmm.
In the remake, there's a lot more of his life falling apart on him and like the girlfriend leaving him and telling him like how empty the lifestyle is and like what's gonna happen and like,
yeah,
where do we go from here and like was this worth it and stuff like that. And so by the time you get to the end, he's literally alone. He's at like no
one.
So
where do you think the fans, because one of the things I just read is how a cult following has built around it. Do you think it lends to the character? Is it a later idolization of the anti-hero? Like, where do you think the cult following has sprung up from? Because like I said, I know a lot of people who like the movie, but I not that they've ever become, they're not criminals, they're normal everyday people.
Well, I think one of the things that helps is there is that scene in the 80s version of Scarface where Tony Montana refuses to like assassinate this I can't remember, they're not supposed to be at UN or something.
Oh, the guy with the kid. He has a kid and the wife.
But like the wife and the kid are not supposed to be in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they're not meant to be there, but like they happen to go with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he refuses to set off it's a bomb, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He refuses to set off the bomb because it means it would kill the wife and the kid. And so he ends up like basically killing the guy.
Killing the assassin.
Yeah, killing the assassin, which, you know, signs kind of his death warrant.
Yep.
And so I think for some people, it's that idea of, well, he's not without scruples. Like, he still has some sort of morality.
He's not a full psychopath. Yes. He's only just 75% psychopath.
Right. Yeah. So I think for some people, like, that helps.
But that's the anti-hero. That's the rise. And I think we've talked about this in the past, perhaps. And if not, you know, the rise of the anti-hero.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think, like I said, I think a lot of people, I'll say this straight up, and I say this as respectfully as possible. A lot of the people that I know who love Scarface, the 80s movie, and like get a huge kick out of it, are the kind of people who are just in it for themselves.
You know what? As you say that, that makes sense, because as I think about the people too, the ones who really like it,
it's a lot less of community driven and family driven and more about what's best for me and how can I get it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do I want? And I don't care if I have to push someone down to get it or worse.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And so a lot of people I know who really like Scarface, I think they just flat out just overlook the scenes that are against it.
Mm.
Like, it's like selective viewing, you know? Yeah. And that happens. Like, it happens with anybody in any film. Like, you can watch a movie and just purposefully, subconsciously almost, ignore the negative aspects of it because you like the movie.
Yeah. And it's when they portray things that resonate with you. Because it's funny, in watching both of these movies, and especially watching the original one, the 32 make original, I kept on bringing up to my wife The Untouchables. And I love The Untouchables. Mm-hmm. With Kevin Costner, Sean Connery. And that resonated with me more than this type of movie ever did as a kid. You know, I always saw myself, and I understood he's the outcast, you know, and he's the straight and narrow, mm-hmm. and he was going to find a way to bring him down despite everyone being against him.
Well, you know, you want to get philosophical or psychological. You know, there is an element to these characters that draws people in. Like, even if you're repulsed by it, there is an aspect of it that you are interested in. And you know, if I'm going to get full-blown Christian here, it's like that sin nature, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we all have a sin nature. And so, like, we're drawn to things that are not good for us. And we want things that maybe are not the best for us. But we want them still. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes we'll pursue them.
Yeah.
And it's, like, inherent in us. But also there is an inherent morality that's like God instilled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously if you're not Christian, you don't believe that, that's fine, whatever. But you also can't deny that there is a sense of morality in each and every one of us. And where does that come from is up to you. But I'm telling you right now. But anyway, if like there is an aspect in these characters psychologically that we kind of look to and are kind of reminded in a weird way of ourselves, because there are things in our life that we want, mm-hmm. but we prevent ourselves from having.
Yeah.
And so when you see characters that don't care and just go after what they want, it's almost not refreshing, but it's almost cathartic in a weird way, because we're kind of experiencing,
mm-hmm.
we're having that experience like through them.
Yeah, you're watching what you'll never be able to do in life.
Right. Like, it's kind of like living vicariously.
It's kind of like, I guess, like the James Bond thing where you can sleep. Where he gets the girl, and he's, you know, it's the idea of that which you can't get in real life, you're living out through a
right. Or, like, you know, we were talking about Batman, right? Mm-hmm. Batman exists because he's doing what the law enforcement in world, in universe, can't or won't do.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, I was watching the latest Batman movie with my friend last night.
I'm sorry.
The Batman, the one with Robert Pattinson.
Did you like it?
I'm halfway through, but I'm enjoying it. Okay. Yeah. For different reasons. Yeah. I still prefer the Tim Burton Batman. Batman Returns is my favorite one.
Okay.
But for different reasons. Mm-hmm. there's enough about this one that I like that I want to keep watching it. It's very gritty, though.
It is.
But there's one scene in it that I was reminded of because Batman's talking to Gordon, and he's saying something, and then Gordon says, well, the police can't go there. And then you just totally know, like, he's like, Batman's like, well, I can. And so there is that aspect there, right? You know, like, mm-hmm. like he's a vigilante. He's gonna, he doesn't matter about the laws because in his mind, he's out for the greater good, you know? Yep. Like, it's a little different, obviously, but there is that aspect. And so I think people in a way connect to that,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you stand on it changes, but I think people connect to that.
Yeah, no, I agree. So the one other thing I wanted to bring up, and I know you said you didn't get that before. I don't know if you have anything else on that.
Talk about the sister.
The sister thing. So when I was watching it in the 83 version, since I saw that one first, and I saw the way the sister and him were, it weirded me out, not going to lie. It was just like, okay, it's like at first I'm like, is that an ex-girlfriend? Is that, you know how in some movies they have multiple love interests? And at first I thought that was, you know, the old school girlfriend that he had at home, or maybe the wife while he was still pursuing another woman. You know, that happens in movies. And when I realized it was his sister, I thought, wow, that was a weird artistic choice. And then in watching the 32, I got a little bit of that, but it wasn't quite as strong as in the 83 movie. And so what you read, I believe, they say that it's actually very strong in the novel. And then further on, I don't have my notes up, but they mentioned that, I don't think the book does this, but they were saying that for the movie, the 32 movie, they really leaned on the Borgia aspect. They used that as an influence, the life of the Borgias. And so they basically talk about how they, I don't know if you came across any of that anywhere.
No, I didn't really look into that much though.
Okay, so you know who the Borgias are, right?
Yeah, but I don't know a whole lot about them. I just know that they're not great people.
Yeah, so it was basically a family in which the father was a cardinal. He eventually became pope. They were a very corrupt family, but they held power. And there was even TV series based on their lives. And
which, you know how accurate that is.
Yeah, I know. And so I've read a lot about the Borgias in general, the history, because I've loved reading about the Medicis and others. And so, like, I don't remember there being incest in the family, but it doesn't surprise me if there would be, especially back in the, what would that be, the 1500s, 1600s? No, 15. And so, apparently, the writer, Hawks, when he was writing the movie, that he actually studied a little bit about the Borgia history, and he used that as inspiration for writing the characters out. Because the whole thing about Borgias is the rise to power from nobodies, only to meet downfall because of your ambition. And so he used that as inspiration in the rewrite of from the original book to the movie he made. And I don't know where this comes from, so any of our listeners who are history buffs in that era of history, if you'd like to let us know, that apparently he drew something from there with the incestuous type stuff and added that idea to him and his sister, and that they in the 83 movie they just kind of left it in there and kind of pumped it up. And it doesn't necessarily mean, like, you can kind of interpret it the way you want to, that there was something. But I think I understand in watching some, recently I watched a movie from that took place in that era where even if nothing physical happened, there is sometimes that connection of family that is so strong that the boundaries are sometimes blurred. And I think that's kind of, at least at a minimum, what they were really trying to impress, that his connection to his sister, like you were saying, kind of the, whether it's the innocence of non-gang life was so strong. And I kind of got that in the ending of the movie of the 32, where it's, I think in the 83, they make it a little more like a little weirder, more sexual. But in the 32, it was more, I got the more Borgia feel in that one, because at the end, it's more like, we're family. We're what's, you know, you're what's important. We're going to go out and defeat the, you know, do what we can with these cops together. Yeah. I don't think it would have passed the Hays Code later on, but it was an interesting choice. And in the 83 movie, it would be interesting. I don't think either one of us came across anything as to why they pushed that one there, but, or what their intentions were. But if you do watch this movie.
I didn't find any reason for that, but I also didn't go looking for it.
Yeah, I didn't either.
That was a can of worms I wasn't really interested in.
I know. So.
Especially in the 1930s version, but even in the remake, I kind of viewed the relationship, like, he's definitely controlling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his character.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that I kind of viewed his relationship to his sister was, like I said, that sense of innocence in her. Because especially once he gets really angry with her, once she starts dressing more provocatively.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this and stuff? And I, at least for me, I didn't get any hint of like him wanting more from her. I think if anything, it was just that, like, she was his tie to, because like the mom didn't want anything to do with him.
Yeah.
Like the mom was deeply upset with like his lifestyle in both versions, but especially the remake.
Mm-hmm.
The mom's upset with him in like why he does what he does. And like, she doesn't want any of the money that he gives her because it's dirty money and stuff like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But like the sister, you know, she loves her brother and she just wants to be a part of his life and that sort of thing, you know? And
Yeah. And
so, like, I viewed it more as Tony looking at her in a way that it was something he lost.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to preserve it in her. And so when she starts dressing more provocatively or engaging in, like, more licentious acts or something, mm-hmm. you know? Like, he gets upset by that because it doesn't match up with his perception of her.
Yeah.
And so he gets angry and takes it out on her or the people. And then, like, in the end, when he ends up killing her husband, not knowing that they're married, he gets deeply upset and he kind of runs away. And he, it's like that moment of, what have I done, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think if it wasn't for the 80s version, like, I wouldn't have even thought more about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But the 80s version, for sure, she, like, is like wearing like nothing.
Yeah.
It just like goes after him, like trying to kill him.
It was weird.
And she's like, yeah, what do you want from me? Like, you want me, you know, like.
So I found the note I have here. It says that in the 32 movie, Hetch, one of the writers, and Hawks worked, they were the writers together. And their intention was to portray the Capone character as of the Borgia family, including the suggestion of incest between the main character and his sister, which is present in the novel. In general, as of the Comonte family was meant to be partially modeled after the Italo-Spanish Borgia family. This, and once again, they say it's the same thing.
I mean, it makes sense, especially for the 30s, because that was one way. I don't know if it was ever outright stated, but if you look at a lot of movies and books and stuff of that time period, that was a way to show audiences like how depraved these characters are.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like an easy way to do it without really showing you much,
because mm-hmm.
audiences can get used to violence and things like that, but when you introduce subject matter like incest or something, like, people are more put off by that.
Yeah.
And so it makes sense from like a story standpoint.
In fact, there's one moment they kind of hinted at the Borgia connection. I don't know if you remember, there was a one point where he whistles a tune, and it actually stood out to me.
Which one?
In the 32 movie. Okay. And it stood out to me because I was like, that sounds very, it stuck out. And according to this, it's the tune he whistled comes from an opera, Lucia de la Mermor. And it's an opera that someone wrote for Lucrezia Borgia, about the Borgia family. And so it was just kind of like a Easter egg they threw in there, which I thought was interesting. That one and the play he goes and sees.
Oh yeah, what does he see again?
Something about Sadie. I remember the name Sadie in it. I don't remember the name of the play.
Yeah. I just remember he has to leave early, right?
Yeah.
He's like, tell me how it ends.
I know. And okay, well, I'll save this for when we decide which one we liked better.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, you have anything else you want to talk about?
Not that I can think of.
I think we're going to wrap it up.
Yep, sounds good.
All right. Do you want to give the rating first, or do you want to say which one you like more first?
Oh, which one I like more first.
Okay, so which one do you like more?
So if I have to decide, it would be, I mean, for me, it's no, I like the 32 version better, but I like older movies in general often better. Knowing what I know about it, seeing the little things inside of it. And so one of the things I did like, even though it was one of the reasons the movie, not critics or people who criticized the movie didn't like this at the time, I guess it was not normal in the 30s, is the juxtaposition of violence and humor. I did read somewhere that they actually didn't like that because they felt it was a minimizing of the, and I get it, but I also like dark humor at times. It helps with the, you know, I like dark humor because I often like deeper messages and the way things are done if it's done well. And so that was one of the things I liked about this movie was when they're shooting the restaurant up, you know, and you have the guy on the phone, you know, and he's kind of like, what, hello? And bullets are whizzing and stuff and things like that. Or even the play thing, right, before they're about to go. And he's like, oh, you stay and watch the play. And he leaves the guy who likes it the least, who doesn't want to even be there, you know. And so there were little things that I did enjoy in watching the movie. And I also like history. I like that era, even though I resonate more with, like I said before, Elliot Ness than I do with Capone. Watching it and seeing it as a historical movie and understanding what was going on at the time and also seeing the edits, the morality edits and things like that made it more entertaining. Will I go back and watch it again? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Neither one of them.
Yeah, it's funny. I've told this to people before. There are a lot of period pieces that I really like. Mm-hmm. But you could take that exact script and set it in modern times, and I probably would not like it. But part of the fun of it is seeing a different time period and the culture, but like the costumes and the sets and stuff. So like there are definitely films and things out there that I like almost not because almost. There are things out there I like not just because it's a period piece, but it definitely helps.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, even like 80s movies. There's some 80s movies that, like, if they remade it today, I definitely would not be as interested just because it's fun to look at the styles and, and the stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's you know, it's not always the case, but like Downton Abbey, like, some of the stuff in Downton Abbey that you watch, it's like some of the plot's a little convenient.
Yeah.
And so it's like, if this was a modern show, I'd be like, But the fact that it's set when it is, it is a lot of fun, you know?
Yes.
It's funny because I just rewatched it, and so when I'm watching it back to back, you're like, "There's a lot of contrivances."
Yeah,
this was very convenient.
Yeah, we actually need to finish it. I think we're in how many seasons are there?
Oh man, six.
So we're probably in season 4.
Okay.
Yeah, we kind of got a little bored with it, and we'll come back to it.
You gotta give it a little bit of breathing room.
Yeah,
you can't just sit and watch a bunch of it.
That's what we did. We binged like 4 seasons.
No.
It was good for the first like 2 seasons. But they're also long. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then,
like, it's not action packed, so.
And then Bridgerton.
Nope.
We're going to do, we'll do that as an, no adaptation of Bridgerton?
Nope.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
No, thank you. Hard no. Anyway.
So which one is your favorite?
That's a hard one. It's a toss up because, like I said, I like the 30s version because of the time period, and I like some of the artistic choices and stuff, but it also felt really slow to me.
Mm.
Like, they both felt slow.
But, yeah, they both were.
But I think I like a lot of what they did in the remake.
Mm.
I like a lot of the choices that they made.
Okay.
So it's hard because I'm leaning more towards the 83 version.
Really? Interesting.
Because I think they are much more against what's happening than the original.
Mm.
Cuz they definitely play into the whole this is all pointless and meaningless. Like, you're fighting for all this, but none of it matters. And
yeah.
Yeah. Like, we didn't even talk about the whole the world is yours sign.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. In both versions of the movie, there's this sign, phrase, whatever. It says, the world is yours, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the original one, it's like an advertisement in, like, neon or something.
Yeah.
And then in the... But then he puts it in his home or something, doesn't he?
It's outside the window.
No, but does... Okay, so he doesn't actually do anything with it.
No.
Okay.
It's just you can see it from the window where he
lives. So he sees it a lot, and he kind of just takes it into his own personal philosophy, I guess. And it becomes a little ironic, you know? But then in the remake, he sees it, I think, on a blimp, like on a Goodyear blimp or something. And then he ends up creating it like a part of a statue where it's in neon on the statue in his home.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the last shot is him, like, spoilers, dead in the water. And then it shows it, and it's a little ironic. It's like, the world is yours, but at, like, what cost, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I think I'll just say the 83 version.
Okay.
But it's a hard one.
Cool.
Yeah. So, scale of 1 to 10. And we'll say 1 is, I wish I never saw this. I wish I could unsee this. And 10 being, I could watch this every day. See, I need to clarify the system, how we do
this. For each movie?
Sure.
All right. Because, yeah, it wouldn't be the same for each. Like, the only way I would probably ever watch the 83 movie again is if someone wanted to sit. So let's say my wife wanted to watch it because she wasn't with me when I watched it. And she's like, you know, and sometimes we like to go back and watch things we haven't seen in years. I can't picture her saying that, but if she were to say it, then I'd rewatch it and be fine with it. But in general, I have no desire to rewatch it again. But I don't think it's like a number one where I waste my time. Very few movies, very few things hit a one. So I'd probably have to say a 4.
Mm.
Yeah, for me, for the 83 version. The 32, only because I actually enjoyed it a little bit more. I didn't find it quite as boring as the 83. But then even then, I probably will not go back and watch it anytime soon. So I think the 32 would be a 5, just because of that. I think
it's funny that this is like the one episode that we've chosen that like neither of us really like.
Yeah.
I think in every other one we've done, there's like we've at least really liked one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, this is the very first one that neither of us really like either of them. It's like someone like dared us to do it or something. Nope, we decided to do this ourselves. We took it upon ourselves. I think I'll give it a 4 as well.
Okay.
I think I might give the... Did you give a 5 to the...
Yes, I did.
I'm just going to say ditto. I'm just going to take your points.
I think it's the first time we've agreed.
Yeah. Because even though I said I think I like the 80s one more, like, I would prefer to watch the 30s one.
Yeah.
But, like, I think I appreciate the 80s one more. Mm. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, like, I don't think I'd want to watch it. Like, if I was said, okay, which one do you want to watch? I think I'd pick the 30s one.
Okay.
But I think I appreciate the 80s one more.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, makes sense.
Yeah, and that's not to say that, like, they're not without their merit and whatever, but not my cup of tea. Okay.
Type of adaptation.
Well, yes, but we forgot.
What are we our favorite character? Characters.
You can pick anyone, any movie.
Favorite character.
Yep, your favorite character from either movie.
So, I would say my favorite character from the 83. No. No. From the 83 movie, I did appreciate the... I don't remember his name, but the friend, his partner.
Oh, yeah.
The one who, like, the sister, and then gets killed for it in the end.
Yeah, that relationship was much more sad in that movie.
Yeah.
Because in the original one, I kind of lost track of the characters in the original one.
Yeah, like, they weren't as fleshed out. Like, yeah.
Like, they were all much more simple, and they all looked similar. And,
yes,
and so I'm like, wait, who is this now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which Italian name is this now? Mm-hmm.
So, no, the...
Gino.
Is it a name? Gino?
I think in the first one. Okay. Yeah. But it's spelled like G-U-I-N-O.
Okay.
Yeah, very Italian. Guino.
That's right. Okay.
So him.
Yeah.
I felt bad for him.
I did too. And I think that
was... Because he's like the friend from the beginning, right?
Yeah. And in many ways, I felt he was the... He's the Sam to his Frodo.
Oh.
And so I often have a special place for the tragic characters.
It was funny because I think watching the 83 version, if that character had like put his foot down more, I think a lot less would have happened. Like a lot less of the bad things would have happened.
Yeah, but when you're up against a psychopathic personality, it's really hard to, a narcissistic.
Yes.
Yeah, it's hard to.
Because he definitely was a bit more level-headed.
I don't know if I have a favorite in the 32, though. Like I, like you said, they all blend together very much.
Look, the mom. You don't have to pick a 32. You can pick anyone.
I'm good with that.
So, my favorite character in... I think I'm going to pick Michelle Pfeiffer's character.
Okay.
I mean, I think Michelle Pfeiffer did a great job. She got some flack from some people because her character's like kind of a pushover in a lot of ways. But also, like, that's the character. Like,
yeah.
She's like a drug lord's girlfriend. Like, you can't really stand up for yourself that much.
True.
For your own life, you know? But she does, though. Like, she does stand up to Tony in that movie, you know? Yeah. And I think, I can't remember how the relationship goes down in the 30 version, but she definitely stands up to him in the 80s version.
Yeah.
And like, leaves him. And so I liked her. I found her very sympathetic. And the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, dude, don't get with him. Like, why are you gonna... What? There's nothing appealing about him. Like, he's weird. And he's trying so hard.
Yeah.
This was fun.
Mm-hmm.
So... now is the time of the episode where we talk about what type of adaptation is this. We have four different types of adaptations that I have come up with. If you have not listened to our podcast before, please take a listen to our trailer where we go in more in depth on the types of adaptations that we talk about and explain them. The first one is true to source material. The second is expanded. Third is artistic. And the last one is message-driven. So, considering those four, what do you think the 83 remake of Scarface is?
I think it was more of an art... because I know we debated artistic, this.
Yes.
It was more of an artistic adaptation of it. I don't know if it was quite true to source material in the sense it was true to the skeleton, but not necessarily true to the source material.
Well, the plot was the same.
Yeah. So, I would say artistic.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Message-driven.
Oh, okay. Based on what you were saying earlier, I can see that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because one, they changed it to, you know, cocaine and the drug lords and made him Cuban, which is a big change, updating it, you know. But then also, it seems like they're very against the lifestyle in the 80s version. Like, especially with, like, how Michelle Pfeiffer's character leaves him and how he ends up alone and he kind of, like, just implodes.
Yeah.
Like, it is true, in a sense, to the original material, and so, like, in a way, you could say it's expanded, but I think there's enough changes where it definitely seems more message-driven.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I think it's not a super simple
one, but... because I know you see the message in there, and I see what you're saying, but when I watched it, I didn't get a message from it, but part of it maybe was because I was just trying to finish it.
You're like, come on, let's get over this.
Pretty much.
I was similar, though, because I had to watch it for class, and so I was like, come on, let's just finish this so I can write my paper.
I know. In this day and age when there's so much to watch, read, and play video game-wise.
It's so long.
It is. It was. Yeah. I really felt like that's why when I watched the other one, I didn't feel it was quite as long as the 83 one, but that was just my feeling.
But you also watched it after the 83.
I did watch it after, yes.
Because I watched the 30s one first, and I did feel like it was a little long and was slow. But then I watched the other one, I was like, this is worse. Anyway, well, do you have any other thoughts?
Nope, I think that's it. I'm good.
Okay. I mean, I'm glad we did it.
Yeah,
It was an interesting one. If only just because people don't know that there was an original movie.
Yes.
They just think that the 80s version is the only one.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun to tell people, oh, we're talking about Scarface, and they're like, it's a remake? Yep.
Yeah, I didn't know that when you first proposed this. I was like, I thought the same thing. I'm like, what?
Yep. All right. Well, thank you all for listening.
Yes.
I hope you enjoyed this. If there are people out there who really love Scarface, and it's their, like, diehard fans, and it's their lifestyle... send us an email. Let's talk about it. And maybe we can do a revisited episode or something.
Yeah.
I would be interested to hear what you have to say.
I know, yeah.
I will withhold judgment until I read it, you know? But it'd be interesting to hear somebody's perspective on that, you know? You don't always have to agree with someone to understand what they're trying to say.
True.
But yeah, I'm glad you all listened to this one. Romy and I, we do this as a hobby. This is just our thing. It'd be great if we could do it more often, but, you know, life gets in the way.
Unfortunately.
But we hope you keep listening to this. If you haven't listened to our previous episodes, please go back and do that.
Mm-hmm. Any feedback you can offer would be greatly appreciated.
Yep. Our email will be in our outro. But you can send us some recommendations. You know, something we haven't thought of, maybe.
Definitely. As long as it's not Bridgerton.
Gosh.
Or Twilight.
I would rather do Twilight.
I would too.
I would rather do Twilight. If someone sat me down in a chair and said, you can pick Bridgerton or Twilight, I'd say, I've already watched Twilight. So it's... I know what I'm getting into with that one.
I know.
Anyway, we hope you all have a good rest of your day. I don't know. I don't like that. Let's start that again. How do you want to end
Thank this? You for joining us, everyone. We hope you listen to our next one. We'll be back eventually.
Sure. Well, until next time, I hope you all have a good day.
Until next time, everyone, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Will Do That. That's always how it works. The piano kicks in. It's like, thank you for listening to Will Do That.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt.
Please like and subscribe. Maybe leave a review or just share us with friends and family.
We would also love if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromy@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.